Shoe obsessions are nothing new. In fact, they're age old, from Chinese lotus shoes to Indian majaris. Societies worldwide have exhibited their culture through their couture. And their stunning footwear is certainly no exception. In ancient Egypt, if you saw someone wearing red or yellow pointed sandals, you showed them respect because this was an individual from the upper classes. And hard as it is to believe, a form of high-heeled platform shoe was being worn in Egypt as far back as 3500 BC. But it was the Romans who started rocking the shoe world with shoes actually designed to fit the individual foot. And it wasn't until the 19th century that huge developments occurred in shoes, things like elastic-sided boots, plimsolls, and even the simple invention of making a right and left-sided shoe. So, much like textiles, shoes were yet another indication of status and wealth. Ancient Greek actors even wore platform-heeled shoes on stage to mark out important roles. And in China, elite women often owned many pairs of silk or cotton embroidered slippers that were buried with them when they died. Scientists believe we've been wearing shoes for around 40,000 years, with evidence of shoe-wearing hunters seen in cave paintings dating from 13,000 BC. So, whether slip-on mules, loafers, wooden clogs, shoes with red heels, pointy-ended shoes, or teetering patterns from medieval times. Let's narrow down our search a little and delve into the beauteous world of the embroidered shoe. Something I'd love to house in my shoe collection right now. Hello and welcome to the Stitch Safari podcast, a sprightly and upbeat expedition into the alluringly appealing ambrosial world of stitch history, art and embroidery. Each fortnight we'll trek through and discover the utilitarian, the decorative, the quirky and the just plain fun world that is the art of the needle. My name's Kathy Jack Copeland and I'm the Stitch Safari Expedition Leader. I'm an Australian textile artist, teacher, judge, blogger and stitch enthusiast whose work in contemporary machine stitch became my business. Women in ancient Rome, Greece and Egypt displayed an excessive amount of toe cleavage when wearing their sandals. Yet, Christian morality in the 3rd century preached humility for women, commanding them not to bare their toes. Coptic 8th century gravestones depict the deceased wearing shoes and mules, a backless shoe originating and still to be found in the Middle and Far East. Even those notoriously warring Vikings liked a little embroidery to soften their hard edges, adding linen thread embroidered onto their leather shoes. And with the emergence of Europe from the Dark Ages and Crusaders bringing back silk, embroidery and buttons from their contact with Islamic products, expensive imported materials and excessive styles became a means for staying ahead for royalty and the moneyed bourgeoisie, with a focus on materials, styles and decorations. Sumptuary laws from 1363, set by Edward II, linked the length of the shoe to the wearer's income and social standing, unless he was a prince who could choose any length he desired. But when I think of embroidered shoes, what first comes to my mind are those exquisitely embroidered tiny shoes from China. Chinese shoes are characteristic of the Chinese culture and elements, but in 606 BC, when Jin Zhanggong became monarch, he ordered that shoes belonging to all women in the palace should bear the embroidered 10 fruit of the flower pattern, including pomegranate blossoms, peach blossoms, grapes, etc. But he didn't stop there, mandating that all civilian girls should wear the 10 fruit shoes at their weddings so that future generations would remember his legacy. Previously, female embroidered shoes bearing similar patterns were called Jin shoes, often bearing stories or characters demonstrating the Chinese culture, but also showing a girl's love and loyalty through the important standard of embroidery. The ancient Chinese philosopher Zhunji mentions embroidered shoes in his book, where he praises the embroidery needles used for embroidery from a philosophical point of view, believing that embroidery needles not only embroider shoes, but also decorate the emperor. Many Chinese poems describe women and the small, delicately embroidered shoes they wore, becoming a representation of Chinese women themselves. The practice of foot binding in China shows just what women were willing to put themselves and their bodies through for their culture and their traditions. The golden lotus shoe resembled a lotus bud, and the size of a woman's foot became a criterion for judging her beauty. The pattern on a pair of golden lotus embroidered shoes reflected the shoe owner's special dreams. Many of these shoes were primarily made in the home by the women who wore them, constructed from cotton or silk, so small that they could fit into the palm of a hand. The women would have used needle and thread, scissors, bamboo embroidery frames, awls, and small irons to make these tiny, tiny shoes. Richly coloured silk threads created gorgeous patterns from toe to heel. Even the sole and insole were embroidered, using patterns of flowers, birds, grasses, insects, beasts, flowers and fruits, mountains and rivers, drama figures, bats, and the beautiful lotus, rising alongside the development of China's silk weaving industry. They also represented her status. Young women typically wore purple or bright green shoes, middle-aged women wore blue-grey or blue-green, and elderly women wore black. Red was reserved for special occasions such as weddings, anniversaries, and New Year celebrations. Chinese women perfectly combined their craftsmanship and embroidery with a rich imagination, all in the pursuit of beauty. The embroidered shoes of ethnic minorities across China also represented their unique customs and traditions, and with influences from the East following the Oriental aesthetic, fashion and decoration techniques. Patterns on the upper shoe reflected life and thoughts, creating an exquisite beauty, as well as the ingenuity and good wishes of countless ancient women across China. Embroidered shoes are one of China's traditional cultural treasures, being the embodiment of emotion and spirituality. With a 2,000-year-old history of embroidered shoes in China, it's the crystallization of accumulated wisdom passed on from generation to generation, becoming the shining pearl in the Oriental costume culture. Indian culture has a history of praising feet. They are considered sacred and objects of veneration, resulting in a vibrant variety of footwear, including sandals, barouches, mules, slippers, shoes, boots, socks, and stockings. Romantic and religious literature written as early as 2500 BCE documents the wearing of toe rings, ankle bracelets, and foot ornaments. But in areas where shoes are not necessary because of the warm weather, shoes have surprisingly become an important part of religious devotion and ceremonial footwear. Made from materials such as wood, ivory, brass, silver, or semi-precious stones such as jade, or a combination of all of these. Indian kings and queens wore jutis or clothes shoes embroidered with precious gems, pearls, beads, and silver and gold threads. These traditional shoes have a history dating back to 200 BC and are invariably embroidered with smooth zardozi, an elaborate embroidery style featuring gold wire and sequins, along with the application of beads, pearls, beetle wings, and precious stones. Sir Thomas Rose, who visited the court of the Mughal Emperor Akbar, mentions the shoes Akbar wore. On his feet, a pair of buskins embroidered with pearls, the toes sharp and turning up. Judy shoes were beautifully decorated with exquisite embroidery and inlaid with precious stones and metals. They were also adorned with tinkling bells and exotic tassels, signifying the wealth, status, and high fashion of the wearer. Hindu grooms wear juta, an embroidered shoe that plays a pivotal role in the ceremonial ritual, prevalent in Indian marriage customs for centuries. Basically, it's a game of hide-and-seek using one of the groom's embroidered shoes, meant to show the acceptance and open hearts of both sides of the family and how they're willing to share a lifetime of laughter and fun together. And here are some examples of embroidered shoes based on an exhibition, Life and Soul, Footwear from the Islamic World. A pair of wooden bath clogs inlaid with pewter and mother of pearl and leather straps covered in gold embroidered velvet were worn to keep the wearer away from the wet and dirty floors. At 26 centimetres high, a personal attendant was required for support. Next, a stunningly beautiful pair of embroidered loafers made in the former Northwest Frontier Province. They're a fashion fusion of Eastern aesthetics and Western shoe design. At first glance, I thought these were made from richly embossed leather, but in actual fact, these shoes are covered in tiny, intricately gold embroidered paisley patterns. And if you look even closer, there are smatterings of green, pink, purple, and blue silk threads used as well. Absolutely stunning and highly fashionable today, I would have thought. The leather insoles are also decorated with a delicate floral motif, as this was admired when the shoes were removed when indoors. I'd happily wear these shoes now. And a delightful pair of red leather slippers, tarkizan, worn by a bride, hand-stitched using a colourfully rich array of silk thread embroidery. The tongues have been made into the shape of the hand of Fatima to protect the bride from the evil eye or the eye of envy, and metal studs have been used to distract and deflect harmful forces, keeping our beautiful bride safe. Another style is the colourful leather slipper with wool appliqué worn by the Berber women of the High Atlas Mountains of Morocco. Also known as babouches, they have a flattened back for easy removal upon entering the home or mosque. Soft, light indoor boots with thin, flat soles were made for men and women in Kazakhstan, with the uppers decorated in brightly coloured leather appliqué patterns evoking the natural world, such as beetles, ram's horns, and cat faces. Overshoes are worn for protection when outside. Another delightful pair of indoor wooden house clogs are covered in purple silk velvet, decorated with embossed and pierced metal plaques, along with teeny tiny little bells. So when I see this wonderfully exotic, exquisitely diverse array of shoe history, I firmly believe nothing I see now in shoe fashion is really new at all. In Western culture, until the Renaissance, women's footwear was generally less interesting than men's, simply because it wasn't highly visible. It was the men who were the peacocks in the footwear department. 15th century aristocratic Venetian women donned mules or shoes called choppins, reflecting their high social status, adding height and decor to their silhouette. Called depraved and dissolute by the church, the choppin style developed across Europe, where in 1600 Shakespeare wrote in Hamlet, "Your ladyship is nearer to heaven than when I saw you last by the altitude of a choppin." The choppin is a type of platform shoe popular in the 15th, 16th and 17th centuries, originally used as a pattern, clog or overshoe to protect shoes and dresses from mud and street soil. Heeled shoes were first introduced in the 16th century, becoming hugely popular for both men and women in the 17th century. In fact, the French king Louis XIV made heeled shoes mandatory for men, and Henry VIII passed a law to make all shoes at least 6 inches wide. But it was Charles II who set a trend for red heeled shoes, proving that nothing in shoe fashion is really new at all. Fashionable ladies' shoes through most of the 18th century seldom used plain fabrics, with the majority constructed with patterned, brocaded, self-figured or embroidered materials. And it wasn't uncommon for a lady to embroider her own uppers, taking them to the shoemaker to be made up into shoes. Ladies' magazines were publishing embroidery patterns for shoe vamps by the last quarter of the 18th century, many inspired by the popular Indian-inspired floral designs, with one shoe residing in the Met Museum circa 1820 to 1749 that has areas of embroidery on silk that have worn away, showing exactly where the pencil design was first drawn. On show at the Bath Fashion Museum was an exhibition titled Shoeforia, showcasing 350 pairs of boots and shoes, illustrating their evolution over the last 300 years, but also demonstrating the creativity and imagination of shoemakers. One of the oldest exhibits is a woman's red velvet mule with gold and silver embroidery circa 1690s, including a floral embroidered high heel circa 1760s, along with a cream silk embroidered pair of baby shoes circa 1850s. Men's slippers worked with Berlin woolwork from the 1880s, and a pair of stunning Russian boots circa 1900s worn by Ottoline Morrell in 1873 to 1938, who was an English aristocrat on the fringes of the Bloomsbury Group, also accompanied the exhibition. Then there's a pair of monogram slippers worn by Noel Coward, made by Tom Hill, circa 1967. Embroidered shoes were also being produced well into the 1920s, with a pair made by Hannon and Sons of London, New York and Paris, made from embroidered black silk with crossed straps and Louis heels. The smaller, narrower foot has been appreciated and accentuated throughout history by wearing a high-heeled shoe, whether for sexual differentiation or architectural significance, or simply to give the ankle a delicate shape. Who'd even think those terms would apply to shoes? But they do. Many techniques were used to decorate shoes, including silk embroidery, applied cord passementerie, and gold and silver metal thread embroidery, worked mainly by professional male embroiderers who belonged to embroidery guilds. Buckles were first mentioned by Samuel Pepys in 1660, and by the 18th century, both men and women suffered from buckle mania, where both sexes displayed elaborate, showy, or semi-precious stones as shoe jewellery, exhibiting an extended foot during a bow or curtsy, just to show them off a little bit more. Fussily embroidered and expensive silk shoes fell out of fashion following the French Revolution, where the footwear mode became more durable and affordable. By the time of Queen Victoria, fine kid and silk slippers were made in a great quantity in Paris and exported around the world. By the 1850s and the introduction of the wireframe crinoline skirt exposing the foot and ankle as it tipped and moved, machine chain-stitched designs worked in colourful silk dubbed chameleons became fashionable for home and evening wear. Heels were reintroduced into ladies' footwear in the late 1850s, taking 20-odd years to find universal appeal. Rococo and Baroque styling was evident on shoes in the 1860s with a return to buckles and bows. Mules also came back into fashion. Exoticism returned during the 19th century via the Crimean War, where Turkish embroideries were exported for the production of shoe uppers in the late 1850s, and when Japan opened its doors to foreign trade in 1867, a taste for all things Oriental made a strong comeback. The impact of the shoe on the silhouette through the tweaking of heel heights and shapes, along with toe shapes, decorations, colours and materials, and the combinations in which they were used, has made for an utterly fascinating history of shoes and cultures across the world. And it hasn't stopped. Christian Louboutin's latest creation, contrived along with Jean-Francois Lesage, is now on sale at his Madison Avenue boutique, inspired by the 18th century's love of high fashion. Featuring delicate embroidery on the base of the shoe with ribbon details with an accent on the ankle, they are fit for a queen, and with a very queenly price tag to boot. But for me, it's that incorporation of embroidery, history, and cultural diversity that's of interest. Embroidered shoes need to make a comeback. Just from this research, I want to explore more and more, and my mind keeps going back to those intricately embroidered, paisley patterned gold loafers. Truly a thing of exquisite beauty and elegant sophistication. Well, my shoe fetish appetite has been whetted, though I don't know about completely satisfied. This research has been so inspiring, and I don't think I really expected it to be. But that's what happens when you begin to investigate history. It's just so incredibly absorbing. Thank you for listening. I really do appreciate your time. I hope you can take this taster of embroidered shoe history and run with it in some form of your own unique creativity. But wait, there's always more to come in 2022, so do stay tuned and subscribe. Stitch Safari's now reached over 9,000 downloads, and that's all thanks to you. It's also been mentioned as one of the 20 best embroidery podcasts of 2021 by Welp Magazine and listed in the top 5 textile industry podcasts as at January 2022 by Feedspot. And I'm extremely grateful. Please leave a message and subscribe to the Stitch Safari podcast. There's just so much more to discover, and it's all so fascinating. I do post interesting tidbits on Instagram and Facebook from time to time, as well as book reviews and a blog on the Stitch Safari website. So do head on over. Till the next exciting episode of Stitch Safari and our next inspiring adventure into stitch, embroidery and design. Bye for now.